truthfully, you never would find it. I've never, and it may be out there, but I've never heard of somebody having a near-death experience where they go, well, you need to go back and join the Baptist church, or you need to start going to mass, or you need to go back to the temple, the Mormon temple. You really almost never hear that. And I started to pay attention to that. And so at some point, I started to think about other things. And then these near-death experiences were starting to show me a different view. And I was started to think this Mormon church, because there are some beautiful truths in there. That it had this beautiful view of the cosmos, but it was like this big, like looking through just a telescope. And I knew that the cosmos and everything in it was huge and wide and vast and just amazing. And I was really tired of that little view.
You got to accentuate the positive. Wow! I feel good. A little bit of feel good goes a long way.
You're listening to Karen Swain, teacher of deliberate creation, accentuating the positive, showing you a way to a better life.
Accentuating the positive, it's not just fad, it's sanity. Who in their right mind would accentuate anything else?
Welcome to another show, Accentuating the Positive with Karen Swain. Here we are with another fascinating conversation for you today. With the gorgeous, I've got a friend online, Kristen Misner.
I'm so excited.
Welcome, Kristen. So great to have you online.
Thank you. Thank you, Karen. I'm excited.
So Kristen and I met how many years ago? Oh, I don't even know now. She was one of the first to join the Inner Sanctum groups when I started them way back when, whenever that was.
And 7 8 years ago,
seven 8 years ago, and she's hanging in there. I think you're the only original member. People come and go, and like hundreds of people say they come and they never come. So I don't know. I might change it up a bit, change the time we meet so that it can be appropriate, more appropriate for people in Australia and also in the northern hemispheres. So I've been telling Kristen she's got to share her story on the show for years.
I've been telling my friends, we talk often on this show about coming out of the spiritual closet. And my closest friends now thought I was out of the spiritual closet. I said, no, I was out of the closet into a little room.
Yeah.
So now it's going to change, right?
Yeah, well, a little bit. These shows don't reach millions. They might reach a few hundred or a couple of thousand, but across the world, but they might never even reach the people that you know in your community. Yes, often people think when they go on a podcast show, the whole world's going to know who they are. And a few hundred people, a few thousand people. I mean,
right.
There are podcast shows out there now that millions of people are watching. So things are changing in the spiritual podcasting world. Things are definitely changing. But Kristen's got an amazing story to share. Yeah, when I've asked her to share her story, then more stuff happens and more stuff happens. It's been this ongoing. So I know a little bit about your story, but not all of it, I suppose. But we're going to share your story with people today. Let me tell people a little bit about you. So, mother of four, Kristen Mismash grew up in the Mormon Church, often referred to as the LDS Church in California. And at the age of 45, she decided to leave the church, much to her husband's disapproval, and follow a more secular spiritual path, one that she had been exploring for around 10 years. Little did she know how far down the rabbit hole this pursuit would take her and how life would present her with challenges to overcome and cement her newfound spiritual knowledge. With the transition of her husband in 2019 and navigating her community and children, Kristen decided not to throw the baby out with the bathwater when living her spiritual principles. She took with her a lot of what she learned within the LDS Church. Today, Kristen helps facilitate consciousness events and gatherings. She also helps to create community for people who feel they have lost their community because they no longer resonate with the teachings within them. A Yasui Reiki master and teacher, Kristen facilitates sound baths and drum circles in her Reiki studio located in Murray, Utah, near Salt Lake City. And she has got a website. There's not much on it yet. Hopefully, by the time you listen to this, there'll be a little bit more on it.
Yes.
I think I asked her about, oh, I don't know how many years ago. Get a website. Put a website up.
Okay, Karen. Okay.
And the website is kristenmissmash.com. Well, darling one, we've got a big journey to get through today.
Yes.
Let's start when you decided you grew up Mormon, and there's a lot of like principles given to you about who you are and how to live. When did you start to question that?
It's a really good question. In I think about that often. When did I really start to question things? I always followed the teachings, and it always felt right to me growing up. And I grew up Mormon outside of Utah, and I had a pretty, we call it active Mormon family. My parents were very active in the church. They had callings. I had a big, well, I still do have a big Mormon family, seven older brothers, three little sisters. So, I'm the eighth out of 11 people, out of 11 children. So that's a big family. I always went to church growing up Mormon outside of Utah. I always kind of felt like a little bit of an outsider. The Mormon community is really, really tight and very supportive. So, with my family and other families at church, it didn't really bother me much. Just at church, at school and things like that, I didn't, have a lot of Mormon friends. I always had a lot of, we call them non-Mormon friends. I had one friend who was Jewish, and I always wanted to go play with her at her house, but I couldn't play with her on Saturdays because that was her Sabbath, and I couldn't go play with her on Sundays because that was my Sabbath. So things like that. As I grew up and became a teenager, I didn't drink or smoke or sleep with boys because that's not a very Mormon thing to do, but all my friends did. It's very common in the Mormon faith. They tell us every member's a missionary. So you're always supposed to be proclaiming the gospel and sharing. And I kind of just kept that to the side. So I never felt like I was the proper Mormon because I didn't do that all the time. But I mean, I truly believed the teachings that I was living, and I loved my Heavenly Father. And every time, if I thought about doing something wrong or incorrect, I kind of like, oh, I don't want to disappoint my Heavenly Father. He loves me, and he knows my heart, and he'll forgive me. But gosh, I just want to do what's right. So I just grew up like that, and I wavered here and there, partied a little bit when I went away to college at Brigham Young University, the God's University, which is the Mormon University. That's what they jokingly call it. Veered off the straight and narrow a little bit, but always went back. And I eventually met and married a man. I had come to live with my parents who had settled in Utah when they retired. And in that time, I met and married the man of my dreams. And we made a conscious choice to, are we going to do this Mormon thing? So we got married in the temple, which is very much the Mormon thing. And in the views, that's you're sealed for time and all eternity when you're married in the Mormon temple. And we decided to raise our children in the church. And he came from a home that wasn't quite as active as mine. So, his dad didn't go to church, but his mom did. His parents weren't married and sealed in the temple, but my parents were but we decided to come together and raise our children together. They talk a lot in the Mormon church about things like feeling the Holy Ghost. I don't know. Do other churches talk about that, Karen? I don't know. They talk about the Godhead, right? There's Jesus Christ, there's God the Father, and there's the Holy Ghost. And some churches, it's all one. Well, in the Mormon church, there are three distinct personalities. And the Holy Ghost is always with me as long as I'm living the righteous, true principles and doing what I should be doing. Then I'm going to have the Holy Ghost as this soft whisper in my ear that's going to tell me, like, gosh, maybe you shouldn't turn down that street if it's going to be perilous, or, oh, you should go talk to that person over there that's by themselves, or that homeless man really does deserve a dollar, kind of things like that. Little bit of guidance. And then maybe if I'm feeling really low, the Holy Ghost is going to comfort me and make me feel better. And so there were times in my life. Well, and then also too, like, maybe I was somewhere and I wasn't sure what I was supposed to do. And we're taught in the Mormon church, you're going to get this beautiful, warm feeling in your chest. That's the spirit confirming to you that something that you're hearing is true, right? Right. So what I'm talking about are these principles that I grew up with that were very much Mormon spiritual principles. And there would be times when I would be sitting in church and sometimes just in the group with all the women. They call that the Relief Society. And I'd be like, after 5 or 10 or 15 minutes, I'd be like, oh, there it is. I feel it. That the spirit must be really strong in the room right now. The Holy Ghost must be really present. Oh, that's really lovely. Okay. So I guess I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Well, there's a lot of controversy about the Mormon Church. And I do specifically remember things about excluding people that were Black, African Americans in America, but Black people from having all the keys of the priesthood and being sealed in these temples. And they were denied it for many years. And they actually weren't given any of the regular rites and rituals that sealed my family for time and eternity, but they weren't allowed to have that, not until the mid-70s. And I like to think, because I don't know for sure, that if I was growing up Mormon in the 70s, like I was born in 1970, right? But if I was at my age now or in my 30s or 40s, I would have like left the church then, because I think that's horrendous, to deny these spiritual God-given blessings, to somebody just because of the color of their skin. So there's controversies like that, right? And then also too, in the Mormon faith, women are supposed to, they're much more subservient. And my cat wants my water, so I'm going to move that. But the men hold the priesthood, and the men have all the keys, and the men hold all the major callings, and the men run the church. And I can be on a committee and do a bunch of things that run that committee, but I always have to turn to the men to make sure it's done right. And that's kind of bothersome too. But around the time that I really, like you said, when I was 45, leading up to that, somewhere in my 40s, there were a lot of women in the Mormon church who were crying out. They wanted to have these priesthood keys as well. They wanted to be able to bestow a healing blessing on their children rather than waiting for, husband to come home from work or to have some higher profile member of the congregation come and do it. Those kinds of things. And I actually didn't want the priesthood myself because that's a lot of responsibility. I already had a responsibility with a husband who worked 2 full-time jobs and 4 kids, right? I didn't want that. But I knew there were women that wanted it. And also, there was a lot of exclusionary things going on with the LGBTQ community. And, with churches and Christian faiths, and here's my cat. She really wants my water. But anyway, they say it's in the Bible, it's an abomination, all these things. So, all the Christian faiths, and the Mormon church really is a Christian faith because it's very Christ-centered. But there was a lot of outcry because people who were gay also couldn't go to the temples and get married and sealed and have their families be forever. So, there were just all these things that were coming and building. And in the meantime, I was having these spiritual experiences. There are spiritual experiences in the spiritual community, but in my church community, I'd feel the Holy Ghost in my chest. I'd sometimes get a whisper here and there. Actually, one time I did hear a booming voice. And all of this was leading up to just, gosh, I know that there's this beauty out there and there is this truth and this knowledge. And I had always studied, I think, since my teens, near-death experiences. So that's kind of my gateway drug out of the church. We'll call it that, if you will. But near-death experiences, and they were fascinating. And people would go to the other side for moments when they'd be declared dead or not. I would read up on it and be like, oh, did they see heaven like they taught me about it in the Mormon church? Oh, did they see the 3 degrees of glory? Did Christ come and say, go back and fulfill your callings at church and pay your tithing? Like I was always looking for these validations. And I honestly, I mean, truthfully, you never would find it. I've never, and it may be out there, but I've never heard of somebody having a near-death experience where they go, well, you need to go back and join the Baptist church, or you need to start going to mass, or you need to go back to the temple, the Mormon temple. You really almost never hear that. And I started to pay attention to that. And so at some point I started to think about other things, and then these near-death experiences were starting to show me a different view. And I was started to think this Mormon church, because there are some beautiful truths in there, that it had this beautiful view of the cosmos, but it was like this big, like looking through just a telescope. And I knew that the cosmos and everything in it was huge and wide and vast and just amazing. And I was really tired of that little view. All these things, you know, what's this discrimination of women, discrimination of gay people, discrimination of people because of the color of their skin? Like it doesn't fit. It doesn't make sense. And so I started to, with the magic of the internet and YouTube, and I had this iPad that my family had given me for Mother's Day, and I'd get everybody to bed at night and I'd hunker down on my iPad and stick my headphones in and I'd watch whatever I want. And my boys were teenagers then, and them and my husband, like, I would look up all kinds of things, like, you know, is this really footage of Bigfoot, or the queen is an alien shapeshifter, or it just the craziest stuff. But I knew they would mock me for it, right? Like, but then of course, you know, the algorithm's kind of smart. It starts to feed you stuff. And I started to actually get people like Dolores Cannon in my feed, as I had watched like every near-death experience I could on there, right? And looking for truths and a bigger view of the cosmos. And I started to really just actually, I'd buy books, but I'd buy them on my iPad so my family wouldn't see me reading them, because they'd mock me for it, you know? I really, they did. They already knew I would watch like all the ghost story things on TV. And I would watch all the shows with the mediums that would do the readings in the room, and you know, the Long Island medium and stuff like that. And I just got to a point like, why am I watching a show for this? I know that these things are real. People really do have these gifts. Maybe I could find somebody that could do this for me, you know, locally. And I was a dance mom. I had two boys and two girls, right? And these two young girls, we'd go to dance. And there was a dance mom that not everybody chatted with all the time, but I chat with everybody because I love everybody. And she was reading this book. We'd always be like, oh, what book are you reading? You know, which Outlander book are you on, or whatever. And this woman, I would just ask her, because nobody was really talking to her, because she's a little quirky, if you will. She's actually one of my dear friends now. But she was reading a book on this thing called Reiki. And I was like, I couldn't even say the word. And she started to tell me about this Reiki experience. And I know now what she was talking about. She was talking about the experiences she was having in her Reiki attunements, which is when, you know, you start to become connected to the Reiki rays to be a facilitator. And she handed me this book, and I kept like closing the book, because I'd open it and I'd read the introduction, and I felt like I was reading a different language. But I was like, this is in English, but I don't understand a word. This book, this is so weird, you know? And I would just go, well, that's lovely. But and she would just tell me about these spiritual experiences, and I was just fascinated. And you know, it turns out that she can see spirits and family members, and she does readings. I've had many readings from her now, but she's the one I turned to when I said, hey, I think I kind of want to get a reading. Do you know anybody? And she's like, oh yes. And she sent me to this one woman. And, you know, I was still a member of the church at the time. And it was kind of like, shh, don't tell anybody. I don't know if I'd get in trouble, things like that. But I went and I had this reading, and it was pretty dang good. It was pretty cool. And she said some things about my main guides, two guides. This is what she did. She went, okay, you know, oh, you have two main guides, and they're right here with you. Everybody has a guide. And they don't really have gender. Oh, this one, he's a man. He's telling me he's a man. And this other one, oh, it's female, and you're connected with her, and you have something in common with her. And she says there's a similarity. And we talked, and then she did this reading. It was about a half an hour. I never quite pinpointed who this woman was. I thought maybe it was a grandmother, but I didn't tell this woman that I'm adopted. So this is something I haven't said here either. I'm adopted. I was adopted as a newborn and sealed to my family for time and eternity through a temple ceremony. It was quite lovely. There was always this discussion between me and my husband. He's like, well, that's not your blood family. I'm like, yeah, but it's my spiritual family. Like, I'm grafted in like the olive tree, like in the scriptures, and we're sealed, And so we would always have these discussions. But anyway, this woman giving me this reading, she goes, whoever she is, you're connected with her. She says there's a similarity, and she wants you to know you're quite psychic and it runs in the family. And I went, okay. I didn't even tell this lady that I'm adopted. So, like, what family does this run in? Like, I had met my birth mother by that point, but I hadn't met my birth father. Like, I didn't know it, whatever. So I thought about it. People out there, if you get readings and Karen, you probably know, like sometimes later you think about it and you go, oh, I know what that is. So it's actually, I don't remember now how I arrived at it because this was about 10 years ago, but it turns out that it's my great grandmother. And the similarity is that I'm named after her. My name is Kristen Elizabeth and her name is Elizabeth. She died in the early 60s, so I never knew her. And it's my adopted great grandmother. But I'm quite psychic and it runs in the family. But I thought about her daughter, my grandmother, and she lived by the Holy Ghost pretty tight all the time. My own mom, the one that raised me, my adopted mother, who I will always just refer to as my mom, was also very intuitive, but listened to the Holy Ghost, right? And so I just thought that was very interesting. I realized who it was. This woman actually stopped giving readings not long after I was going to get one a few months later. She had stopped something about it. I don't really know. I will tell you, it wasn't the warmest reading I've ever had. And I don't know that I would go back to her except for I trusted her, right? I think she just got jaded and tired of, because she did this whole reading for me and she goes, you're actually quite beautiful. Everybody comes in here and they've had all this trauma and they're crying and tears, and you just have this lovely, wow, you have this lovely life, right? So a year later, I decided to go get a reading again. And I was recommended to a woman by a good friend of mine who you met, Karen. We came to Australia with her when I came to see you, her and her daughter.
You did.
Yes. And I walked right in, and it was so interesting. This woman, beautiful, warm, loving, like what you would think this medium would be, just big and soft and huggy, right? And she did the same thing. She goes, oh, okay, you have two guides, and they're right here. And this one, they don't usually say that they're male or female, but this one's telling us it's a man, and this one, it's a woman. And I go, and it's Elizabeth. And she goes, yeah, it's Elizabeth. Yes, da 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 da. And she goes, she wants you to know something. You're quite psychic and it runs in the family. So, totally different medium, totally
Yeah,
different.
love it.
Yeah. So, that's where I just finally said, all right, no holds barred. I'm just going to study everything I want. And I started studying Dolores Cannon, and there's so much there. And everything I read from her or watched her YouTube videos, it all rang true. And I'd get that feeling here. Right. And sometimes actually it would grow a little bit and it wouldn't be just there. And I started reading Garnet Schulhauser, and we've talked about him and you've had him on your show. And I actually met him in person. But his first three or four books, oh, they just opened my eyes to what it really is like on the other side, So I've talked for quite a bit there, and there's so much more to say, but that's really where I finally arrived at where I would start to just dive in,
Yeah, there's so
totally
much more.
dive in.
So much more to say, but yeah, Kristen always tells me that Garnet Schulhauser was how she found me, because I Garnet had reached out to me, oh God, I don't know how many years ago, and it's probably about 8 years ago, and said, can I come on your show? Here's my story. And I'm like, whoa, like damn, this guy is amazing, because he just shared a bit of his story. And I put him on the show and I had no idea what he was going to say. Hadn't read his books. And I was totally dumbfounded at his experiences. Like, wow.
They're
Because I mean, he's
incredible.
incredible. New World Teachers, first in the Academy of Light and then on radio and then podcasting. So for years, and I had never heard, well, I actually had heard one other person who'd had astral adventures that had been taken with a guide to different realms. I had read a book about it. Anyway, that's another story. So I had this silly cover image of me going, And Garnet looking really serious. And Kristen thought, who's this idiot?
I kind of did. I'm like, gosh, he's got all this great knowledge, and why would I watch this? But I exhausted YouTube. There were no other Garnet Schulhauser videos to watch. And then I honestly kicked myself after, because you're such a delight and your interviews are so beautiful. And then you became somebody that I learned so much from because of all the people on your show after that.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, it's been a journey. I know Garnet blows your mind. So some of the things that his
Yeah.
guides had shown me
Yeah.
about the universe and yeah, all this mystical stuff that we think is myth. And he's like, nope, not myth, real, real. I met
Yeah.
them. You know,
Yeah.
Sasquatch, fairies, mermaids, ETs, you name it. Everything
Yeah.
that had been put in the, you know, myth basket is he's met them.
Yeah.
Whoa. So, okay. So the reader had said to you, everyone's always got these problems and they're always crying and they want to know why, and you've got this lovely life. So you were exploring at the time, but this lovely sort of easy life shifted somewhat, as I said in the bio, life
Totally
presented
did.
you with challenges to overcome to really live the principles that you grew up with and also that you've been reading about. So do you want to share what happened?
Yeah, I would love to share. There was a change in the church's policy where some information got leaked about their policy in the Mormon church's policy that got leaked out, and it was affecting children who had gay parents. And it actually ripped my heart out. I realized, I know now that I'm a knower, right? Clairsentient. And I could almost see with my waking eyes, but I saw it and I knew it. And I knew that this change in this handbook that was leaked was going to have a horrific effect on these children that had gay parents or anybody that was gay. I could just see a wasteland of people being devastated and people taking their lives. And after this handbook change was leaked, it was just a handbook for the bishops, for the local clergy to use. If this is presented to you, this is how we handle it. And it was very exclusionary for people of the LGBTQ community. And you can find research on it. It happened on November 5th of 2015. Was when I actually walked away from the church because that's when I said, this is it. But the suicide rate in Utah doubled, tripled, especially with young people. And I knew it.
Whoa.
And
Wow.
so I walked away. So that was 2015. In the end of 2017, a really dear friend of mine, one of my dearest sister's friends, oh, she's actually my Reiki master now. Came to me and said, you know, Kristen, you had this Reiki session last year after you had this surgery. And, you know, I just want to let you know, Reiki calls to people, but I just feel like I'm being tapped. That's her word. I'm being tapped that I should let you know I'm starting a class next week, and a couple of your friends are in it. And I said, well, Debbie, how much does it cost again to do that? Because she told me a year ago how much it cost. And at the time I was like, all I could hear was my husband going, yeah, forget it, right?
Yeah.
And then, well, okay, well, so I said, how much does it cost? And she told me, and I said, I have my own money now. But back then it was the story in my head, you know, it was the same situation, but it was the story in my head. I wasn't ready back then. But I said, how long does it take? And she goes, well, it takes all day, you know, to teach all this. And then we do the attunement and you come back a month later, it goes all day. And when she told me that a year before, I could hear my husband going, you're going to be gone for how long and it's costing how much? You know, but by then I'm like, he's fine with the kids, which he always was,
Yeah.
because he's a great dad. And I got my own money, so who cares? So I signed up to take this Reiki class, and it was in December. And she's sitting in there, and there's four of us in the room, and she says, oh, let's go around and share what called you to Reiki. And everybody had this beautiful, like, oh, you know, the light shone on the Reiki book. I don't even remember, something like that. And I said, honestly, Debbie, you called me and this time it made sense. So I signed up. So I did the first session and got my attunement for level one Reiki. And she's very adamant that you do a 21-day cleanse before you do level two, because there's a lot of purging that your system or upgrades or whatever you want to call it. So that was in December. We ended up, it ended up being about 30 days till we could get back together as a group, just with coordinating schedules and husbands and kids and stuff like that. And what's really interesting is in that 30-day period, my husband, we sat in a doctor's office and he'd been having tests run for a couple months. And finally, there was actual news that they found what the problem was. And we were sitting in the doctor's office and we were handed a stage four cancer diagnosis. And the doctor was dancing around this number and he wasn't even saying stage four, but it was cancer. He had appendiceal cancer. It's a very rare cancer. And in fact, he had the rarest form of this very rare cancer. And I realized, oh, he's saying that he has stage four cancer. And this is how the thoughts ran in my head, and it was quick fire. And it was, oh my gosh, my children, they're going to lose their father. And then the next thought was, oh my gosh, my mother-in-law, she's going to lose another child, even though my husband was a grown man, but she had lost a, they had lost somebody in the family who was 20 years old to a drunk driver. And then finally I got to me. And the thought was, oh my gosh, what about me? And I went, now it's time to know and to see if I can really walk the walk and talk the talk of all this spiritual stuff I've been learning. And I actually said, challenge accepted. And I took it on. And that was January 1st, or I'm sorry, January 11th, 2018, when he was diagnosed, 1-1-1. And so the next time when I went to Reiki level two, okay, so it was about a week or so later. In that week, my husband was given a book called Radical Remission. And it was about this research that this psychologist had done, all people all over the world who had cured themselves of stage four cancer. There were nine things that these people had done all over the world. And there was an entire chapter in there on energy work, namely Reiki. And so he had given me crap the month before, going, how long are you going to be gone? How much is this? I got my own money and you're great with the kids. By the time he finished that chapter, he said, when are you going back to learn level two? You've got to do Reiki on me every day.
Wow.
And I sat there in the class and I said, now I know why it was called Reiki. And I did Reiki on him all year long. And he passed March the next year in 2019. So. And I did Reiki on him often, actually. And there's some really cool things to share about that with his passing. But
Oh God, are we going to get through this without bawling our
yeah,
eyes out?
it's okay.
No, I've lived it. I've heard the story a million times.
You've heard this story a million times and you were here for it. You
I
were
know.
one of my spiritual guidances all through it all.
It's so interesting because someone in our group has passed recently, and we're looking for her psychically because she kind of just disappeared from the group. And one of the other participants said, "I'm not sure. I think she might be dead," because she was not a very well person, and I'd often thought that she might be dead when she disappeared before. But when searching for someone that you love and know, it's like it just interferes with the psychic. And it was the same with your husband. Every time you ask me, is he going to live or die? I would never get the direct, I would say, it's his choice. It's his choice. It's his choice. But there was a young man in our group that came a few times. Do you remember? And you were talking about it one day, and he said, oh, yeah, he's going to pass soon. And then everyone like that. And he was so like, oh, did I say something terrible? But no, he didn't say something terrible. He just said the truth. But it's kind of shocking when you hear it like that. But he never came back to the group. I think he was scared him off.
He was he it was shocking. I'm trying to remember who that was. It was
Yeah.
interesting because you wouldn't ever just say, and I actually had a knowing about 2 months after his diagnosis.
Yeah, you did.
I
You
had a
did.
knowing that
You
I
had a
would be a
knowing at the diagnosis. You had the knowing.
yes,
Yeah.
yes. And I had a knowing that I would be a widow before I was 50 years old, and I was actually 48 when he passed.
Yeah.
And that he did have a choice because there were some choices with his treatment that he made towards the end that accelerated his passing into the other realms. That accelerated that he did something that all the black box reactions showed up, and it was totally his choice, and he didn't have to do it. But in a way, it's a blessing if you want to use that term. I don't usually use it, but it was because he was in pain. It was awful. Cancer is, Karen, you've watched it too.
I've lived through it as well,
It's
but
brutal.
it's brutal. Well, I don't know if cancer can be brutal. I think the treatment is brutal. I think the treatment is
The
brutal.
treatment is brutal.
The
There you
treatment's
go.
brutal.
Thank you.
The treatment's
But
brutal. Anyway,
I did do Reiki on him often.
you
Yeah.
did. And let me ask you, and how do you think the Reiki helped? Because obviously it didn't save his life.
It didn't cure him, no.
And how do you feel when you said to your, guides, mob, Holy Spirit, what do they call him? Trying to find the names. When you said to the universe,
Daniel and Elizabeth, they're my main
when you
guides.
said to
There
the
you go.
universe, God, well, when you said to the God, okay, challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted.
How did going through the illness and the passing of your husband, help you walk the talk? And so, two questions. How did the Reiki help him, and how did it help you walk your talk?
Yeah, I will tell you this first, how I walked my walk and talked my talk. I went to him and I said, I want you to know, because I do know that I do come from the camp that the treatment for cancer is more brutal than the cancer itself. But I told him, this is your life. This is your body. I will support you in any way you want. Whether you do treatments or not, I will support you. And he decided to go with chemo and he took on all kinds of diets and read the China, what do they call that? The China, like he took dairy out of his, and he became vegetarian and he did a lot of intermittent fasting. It was actually quite beautiful. And he had, there were some miracles. And, but it was really interesting. He traveled for work. And oh my gosh, it was only about 2 weeks after he was diagnosed. He called me in the morning. I was on my way to work. And he's like, I had the most incredible, the most incredible thing happened in the hotel room last night. And I was like, what was it? And he started to describe this blue light showed up and he felt his grandmother call it. He heard his grandmother call his name. This grandmother's beloved grandmother in their family who had passed a few years before. And just he had this thing. And I said, oh, that's really cool. Because whenever I would talk spiritual stuff before this, he was like, whatever, you know more than the prophet does. You think you know more than God? No. But right? So he's saying, oh, I had this happen. And I said, oh, that's really cool. And it was silent. And I go, well, I kind of have an idea. Do you want me to tell you? Like I was being really sheepish. And he goes, yeah, I'm telling you this because I want you to tell me what happened to me. And I was like, oh, he believes me now. So he really flipped. And I did. And it was this blue healing light his grandmother was giving him. And I believe now, because I knew he was going to pass, that it was a protective, loving bubble for him. And in fact, when I would do Reiki on him, his grandmother would be at this side of me every time. And I'm laying my hands on him, and she'd have one hand on my shoulder and her other hand on my hand. And his brother, who had passed years before, was on the other side every single time
Wow,
I did
beautiful.
Reiki on it. But I just was open to all possibilities of him miracles coming in. But I was also open to the possibility that he was going to pass. And I wanted to make it as beautiful as possible because everything I had learned is that the other side is the most amazing place to be. And I knew that he would always be with me, and he's around all the time. And I have there's so many things that are amazing. There's so much that I ex I had all these expectations, and he didn't come to me with questions like, what's it going to look like when I die? But I was like, well, I hope I get to talk to him after he dies because these are all these things that I study, and I can't wait to hear what he says about it. And in fact, there were some really cool things about that. And but I did, I'm going to go to the Reiki for a minute because I did do Reiki on him often. I didn't do it on him every day because he'd still traveled for work. And I would feel these presences there often. And I learned a lot about myself with the Reiki because he was the first person I'd ever done it on. And he was the only person for a long time. But the cancer progressed over the course of that year. So he was diagnosed in January. And come December, he was in the hospital. And he was in a really bad way. The type of cancer he had didn't really like eat away at his digestive system. It choked it out. And so he was having all kinds of digestive issues and bowel issues and surgeries to correct. And I would just be in the hospital. He'd be like, "Oh, it's hurting, it's hurting, it's hurting. Come do Reiki on me, come do Reiki on me." And I wouldn't do the whole session like on the head and all down the body. I would just direct it. And it was also, I'll just add this, it was really cool because nurses would walk in and out. And I'd be like, "Oh, do they care that I'm over here?" And they wouldn't bat an eye. They wouldn't bat an eye. They just let me do my thing. It was really beautiful. But I learned about myself with Reiki. And Karen, you know this because you tried to train me on many things, that I'm an overthinker and I'll talk myself out of stuff. And so when I am channeling the Reiki rays and my hands are being used, I kind of actually step out of myself and have a conversation over here so that I can be this hollow bone, this pure channel of the Reiki rays and let them do what they're going to do. And at one of these points in the hospital, because I knew he'd turn a corner, I had this side conversation with myself and I went, "You know, I know that this is not going to cure him. So why am I doing this Reiki? Why am I doing this Reiki? It's not going to cure him." And a voice came clear in my head, and I know this voice now, that it's my main guide, Daniel. And he said, "This isn't meant to cure him. This is meant to prepare him." That was it. Now, I never told anybody that because nobody else outside of my husband and my kids knew I was doing Reiki on him except for my Reiki master
And me
and Karen and my dear friend Karen.
and the group.
But nobody else really did because I was still in the closet and his family would have thought I was absolutely nuts. And so would my family. I don't know, you know, those are the assumptions we make when we do these kinds of things. So he passed a few months later into the other realms. And the beautiful people Karen knows, because I went to visit you in Australia in 2019. And I brought this friend of mine and her beautiful daughter, gifted daughter. And this friend of mine actually grew up with my husband in the same congregation at church and in the same neighborhoods. And they were very close and close with her daughter. And the night that he passed, he came to her, to this gifted daughter. She sees spirits, has since she was a child. She's a young adult woman in her 20s by this point. And this is how my friend tells me. She came and she goes, "Mom, mom, mom, Andrew's standing in my room." Andrew's my husband's name. Andrew's standing in my room and he's talking to me, or he's trying to talk to me, but he's not saying anything. And my friend was like, "What's he want to do? I don't know, mom. I can't understand him." And she said, "Well, I don't know. Just go back to bed. Maybe he'll come back I don't know." You know, it was, you know, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, something like that. So the way my friend tells me is the next morning, they're sitting there, it's like 7 o'clock in the morning, and they're having their coffee and they're sitting here like this with their coffee cups and looking at each other. And she goes, "So, did Andrew come back?" And she goes, "Yes, he did. And he had a lot to say. He learned how to communicate in
Ah,
whatever, a couple hours.
yeah.
And he has messages for Kristen. We need to go talk to her." So then that was actually the night that he passed away. Well, she came to me. She gave me a couple days because there was a lot to do. And they came to my house and they said, "You know, are you okay? Did Andrew, have you had messages from Andrew?" You know, and everybody, actually I have a lot of gifted friends now. And Karen, you're one of them, but he actually went to a lot of people. And
Yeah.
everybody was like, really careful. Like, should we say something to Kristen? And I'm going to be honest with you. I was counting on everybody else because I knew I'd probably be blocked because I was sad. I was relieved. I was so relieved that he was gone because that was just not a beautiful ending for the life of a beautiful man. But I had a lot of friends and I said, "You guys, I'm just relying on you guys. So please tell me, what did you get?" because I believed in all this stuff. Well, she said that he came and he talked about just what it was like when he passed and could I see this golden light in the room? And no, I couldn't. You know, we were all in tears. Everybody was around him, surrounding his body. He died in my home, in our home. But then she kind of told me a few other things. And then she goes, "Okay." Like as though he's standing there. "Okay, I'm getting to it. I'll ask her. Give me a second." And
Yeah.
She goes, "He wants you to know Reiki is real and you prepared me well."
Oh.
And I told nobody, nothing about that in the hospital. Nothing.
You're cracking me up, girl. You're cracking me up.
I know.
Discouraging.
Yeah. And so there you go. I don't believe Reiki is the only thing that's real, but I do still operate with Reiki, and I've learned other modalities and other shaman tools and all kinds of things. But yeah.
Well, here's the miracle.
Mm-hmm.
Often when people are sick, they're looking for a miracle, like you're going to get better and stay on earth. That's what they look for, and that's what they call them. But the miracle is not the not dying. The miracle is the shift in perspective from fear to love.
Yes.
Like Andrew, I met Andrew on Zoom. He had strong opinions. Do you know what I mean? Like churches do.
Strong yes.
beliefs. That no one is going to bend those beliefs because I'm bloody right and all the rest of you are wrong, right? Like he was that sort of person.
Yeah, he was very dogmatic.
Which in this life can make one quite successful when you sort of, you know, hold to what you believe.
Mm-hmm.
But that the miracle of that, that's the miracle, that shifting of perspective and softening and opening, you know, that's what the sickness and the death experience gave him. And that Reiki that you did on him was even more of that. He got to experience what you were talking about. Like, had he not been sick, he would never have asked you to do Reiki on him, and he would not have got to experience what you were experiencing.
Right. And maybe I would have never really stepped into doing Reiki.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
What a better way to catapult me into stepping into something that's a beautiful way to tap into the energetic life force that's out there for everyone.
Yeah. So in his decision to don a human life and be dogmatic and get sick and change his perspective and leave the planet, you know, was a blessing because it really helped you step into your own. Because you were holding all these beliefs or discovering many things and going on a journey that the community around you was against.
Right.
And so this experience just, you know, helped you live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The beautiful thing is that, you know, the Reiki really does go in concordance with the healing that goes through a priesthood blessing. Andrew and I had an argument. A huge long argument over all the things that I was questioning in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, and this was before I really knew about Reiki. And I said, you know, I just believe there's this energetic life force out there. And you were taught within the church and other pastors and people in churches and faiths were taught a certain way to access it. I believe I could access it too. And that's what I believe Reiki is.
Yeah.
And I have a dear friend. And he's worked right up with the prophets in the church, and he's a doctor. And we had a discussion. He learned Reiki from another woman, and then ended up finishing his Reiki training with the same Reiki teacher that I have. And we're all really great friends. But one time I was talking to him, and he said, "Yeah, I learned Reiki, and you know, it's interesting." And I said, "What was interesting about it?" And he said, "Well, it was interesting when I got to level two, where you start to lay your hands on the person and channel the Reiki rays." He said, he went like this. He goes, "I put my hands and then I went like this." And I went, "I know what that is." And I said, "Oh, what is that?" Kind of in this like snarky little sassy way. I'm like, "What is that?" And he looked at me and he looked at me and I said, "What'd it feel like?" And he goes, "It felt like the priesthood." Here he had learned to channel the Reiki rays, and he'd been offering priesthood blessings for many, many, many years. And he said it felt the exact same.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, as we, you know, discussed in the bio, you don't throw the baby out in the bathwater. A lot of the teachings through church, any church really, describes a lot of what we experience in a consciousness community, spiritual community, whatever you want to call us, new age, you know, I don't care what label you give us. We love labeling here on earth. But you've been a student and a teacher of deliberate creation, both through me and many other teachers. And the principles of deliberate creation is feel good, feel God. And also that God aspect or source aspect has been referred to as the higher self or soul or the universe. You know, we are one, which is quite different to church teachings, which puts a God outside of yourself, like you're contacting some entity outside of you, right?
Yeah.
Contacting the divine aspect of you outside of ego and personality and, you know, human conditioning. How does it dovetail for you, the sort of the Mormon teachings and the deliberate creation teachings? I'd love to hear that.
I love to talk about it, because this is some of the things that I work to do in my community, because so many people, I mean, churches all over, but the Mormon church, that's the topic of conversation, because I live in Mormon Mecca in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Mormon Mecca, yeah.
Yeah, that's basically what we call it. And, you know, they're hemorrhaging members because the internet can't hide the falsities that, you know, they perpetuate. And the world is waking up, Karin. We talk about it all the time. We're all waking up.
Right.
But, you know, what I am absolutely grateful for till the day I die are the teachings in the church that were this foundation. Yeah. You know, that Holy Ghost that speaks to me, he's spoken to me a few times in my life. But guess what? His voice sounds exactly like my spirit guide, Daniel. Isn't that funny?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the exact same voice, the exact same tone. So now I go, oh, the Holy Ghost is really my main guide. They don't care what we call them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care. They're just here to offer us comfort, give us guidance, if we're open to it. So my church taught me to be open to listening, and I heard him. And now I know, you know, who it is. And also, I'm really grateful for the foundation of the way that I was taught to pray. I was taught to pray to open in gratitude. You know, thank your Heavenly Father for all your many blessings. If I sit to meditate, how do I get to the highest vibration? I sit in gratitude before everything. And then I get right connected to source and everything, right?
Right.
Deliberate creation, you know, in the Mormon church, they're not to talk about this topic for very long, but they talk about pay your tithing, pay your tithing, pay your tithing. I mean, the money in the Mormon church is a hot topic. But we're taught to pay our tithing. But the way that they teach it is deliberate creation, because they say, if you pay your tithing with the right spirit and you pay that first with the best of intentions, all the blessings will follow. And so there was a right. time when Andrew and I were planning this trip with our kids and the money was tight and certain things didn't happen that were supposed to happen. And I said, okay, I'm going to do it in the right spirit. And I wrote our tithing check before I paid anything else. And then I paid the house payment, the car payment, the insurance, and a couple bills. And we didn't really have very much money to go on this trip, but we'd promised the kids, what are we going to do? But I just sat in, I paid my tithing. I did it with the right spirit. And guess what? I found a gas card that had $1,000 limit on it, so we could put gas, petrol for you, fuel in the car, so we could go to take the kids to Disneyland, and some job that was never going to pay on paid on, and all these beautiful blessings came because I paid my tithing in the right spirit, right? But really, that's just deliberate creation, and I sit in that same exact teaching now.
Yeah.
So I do believe that these religions, and, you know, not to go down a dark turn, but I think they take these principles and they twist them.
Yeah.
They know deliberate creation.
Yeah.
You can't tell me they don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
They know that. And they twist it. Let me get totally connected to my spirit guide. They let me get just an inkling.
Just a little bit. Just so I can control
it.
But I want to illustrate some of the best, you know, teachers on deliberate creation. So the lady that made, what's her name, God, that made The Secret, and a television producer, she was talking about how she made The Secret, raising money. So we're talking about money, pay tithing. She was saying that it kind of exploded, and the money that the Channel 9 had given her that had said, you know, she was going to make it for television. It's a longer story. And they sort of gave her some money, but it sort of exploded. She needed millions more. And she was like, I was going to use The Secret to create The Secret. And she said that she was feeling the limit, the lack of the money she needed to finish the movie, the documentary. And she said, so she was sitting in lack and she wanted to sit in abundance because she knew that when she felt abundance, so how did they explain it? Pay your tithing with the spirit, like
In the right
energy
tone
in the
that you
right
get, yes,
tone.
in the right energy. And we're all every Mormon's taught that. Every Mormon is taught that.
So what she did to generate that feeling of abundance and generosity in herself was she took out some money from her bank account, personal money, and she went down the street and started giving money out to people. Like not just homeless people, like random, just giving money out to people to invoke that feeling of joy and generosity and abundance. And then all these investors came in and she finished, and millions of dollars were raised and she finished the movie, you know, also Louise Hay spoke about this too. You know, she was one of the first teachers of deliberate creation, talking about don't be resentful of your bills. Like, be grateful that the money that you're paying to the electricity company is putting your lights on. You know, just coming back at that spirit or that tone. Or and when you pay money out, don't like, oh, bloody electricity bill, oh, bloody taxes. Esther and Jerry Hicks, the same thing. Abraham would say, pay your taxes and don't think, oh, these taxes are funding war. Think about where the taxes, where your money is going. It's building the roads. It's upgrading the highway. It's doing things that is helping me, like, think about it in the, yeah. So it's the same teachings in many ways.
It is, and I was taught that, and I actually am very grateful for that. There are a lot of teachings in the church. You know, I was taught that that the earth has a consciousness in the Mormon church. Now, that's a little bit of a stretch, but this is how I was taught that, and me and my father would talk about this often. In the Mormon faith, Christ was the one who created the earth. He was instructed by God and he came down and created this earth. And when Christ, in the teachings, was crucified on the cross, the earth wept for its creator. So, how could it not weep if it didn't have a consciousness? So, I was taught in lessons that rock over there has a consciousness, or, you know, Jesus Christ created it, right? So, I was taught things like that. And then I was also taught to listen to the spirit. So, that's my spirit guides. And then I even hear you say this sometimes, and I absolutely love this. So in the Mormon faith and in the church, when you're an active member, you're given callings. So you're a teacher, or you teach lessons, or you get up and talk in church, or you get up, like it's a lay clergy. So all the members are the ones that are doing all the teaching. And you know, I could get called up to the stand to give a talk in front of the entire congregation on the fly. But you know what? If I'm guided by the Spirit, I'm going to say exactly what the congregation needs to hear. And I've even heard you say this, Karen, and I'm always like giggling to myself because I'd sit and I'd prepare this whole lesson to teach to my Sunday school class. And then I'd get there and I wouldn't know where these words were that were coming out of my mouth or to teach the Relief Society, which is the women. And it would be this beautiful lesson and people would be in tears and be like, that's exactly what I needed to hear today. And I was just open to the Spirit telling me what to say to give to these people. And I was taught that. And then I know that tons of people in the spiritual community are like, well, I'm just gonna let spirit guide. And I'm just gonna, the teachers and the extended masters are gonna come in and tell me what to say. I don't need to prepare anything. And it's beautiful. And it's exactly what people needed to hear all the time. And I was taught that from childhood. So, you know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, you know?
We're channeling it. I was I'm helping a client put together a podcast, and he often says he used to be a Canadian. He used to live in Canada, and when people like Wayne Dyer and Deepak were traveling around America back in the 80s, I think, or 90s, they didn't come to Canada, so he put on events for them throughout Canada. So he met Wayne Dyer personally. And Wayne would often say, I don't know what I'm going to say, but I know that I'm going to say exactly what you need to hear. So he would often say that before he went on stage. I'm just going to show up and start talking. And I say that with everything I do, with clients, with shows, with, groups, just show up.
Yeah, but Karen, don't you sometimes some of the people that you teach and guide, don't you need to teach them that? And it's hard when we get older to wrap our head around the fact that what's going to come out is what needs to come out, and just trust and be open to the guidance. Where I sit with that now is I open my heart. So talking about the church and having callings and being, everybody has something that they do in the church. Well, my favorite calling in the church was the ward activities chairperson, meaning I did all the activities for the entire congregation for 8 years. All the barbecues, all the breakfasts, all the, field trips, everything, firesides. I did that for 8 years, and I was taught to sit and make sure that there was the message, that there was Christ in the message, and to get guidance from the Spirit. Well, guess what I do for a living now? I'm an event planner, and I sit there, and somebody comes to me, and I'll be running, helping run a conference, and somebody comes and goes, "Oh, somebody's in this room, and we've booked both rooms at the same time. I don't know how it missed all of us on the schedule. What are we going to do?" And I sit there, and I've finally, even in the last couple of weeks, I've realized this is how I'm able to do what I do, is I sit and I actually go to my heart. I don't think about it. I go to my heart and the answer comes. Oh, that's all right. We're going to use that other room that nobody's using right now, right? Nobody's in that other room, even though it's set up. Move the chairs around. We're going to go use it. Get a mic in there. Can we get a mic in there? Great. And I don't know where it comes from. And I started doing that when I had working for, I had a corporate job where I did all their recognition. When everybody hit all their goals, I would throw all their parties. And I would sit there and I'd go, okay, this problem. And if I went to my heart, the answer would appear. And guess what I'm known for? I'm the problem solver. Well, I'm not doing it. It's the connection to source. I was taught that growing up in the Mormon church, but it's not throwing that out. And I do, I create conscious events, and I just did a helped facilitate an entire event last night where bowls and chanting and connecting into your heart, and people were telling me their experiences, and oh my gosh. And I just sat there holding space in the room because I wasn't the one playing the bowls or leading the meditation, but so much fun. And the funny thing is, we talk about this. I'm living my bliss. I
Yeah.
am living my purpose. Running events, does that sound like living my purpose? But I sit here, oh gosh, you've been talking about it while it's happening. I call it happy sparkles. And I'm starting to think about this conference that I'm helping IANS, International Association of Near Death Studies, like I'm helping them plan this conference where 500 people are going to show up. And there's meals and rooms and speakers. And they go, oh, we don't know what to do about this with registration. And I sit and bliss, sparkles run through all my veins, and I'm like, challenge accepted. It comes again. And I'm like, this is what we're going to do. And magically, most of the time, it all just works out because I let it
In
fall into
place.
place. This gifted friend of mine who's worked with me a little bit now, she illustrated it. She said, Kristen, I've watched you. And it's as though you see it like it's a big piece of sacred geometry. And I said, it is, though. It totally is. And this event or this thing that I'm planning, or even if it's a birthday party, it's this geometric shape that I see. And if I connect into it, it all just fits and falls into place.
Awesome place. Amazing. Beautiful.
And it's just doing events. That's
Oh.
not healing the planet, but it's creating ripples that heal the planet because
Oh
we
my
get
God.
everybody
Bringing people
together.
together is so important. Bringing
And
people connected
you know
together.
what I'm talking about, Karen, because you do run events. You've done it for decades.
It's so important. I mean, I do mostly stuff online, and that would sort of serve me well during, during that time in 2020, 21.
Yeah, everybody was like, what's this Zoom? And I've been
Mention
doing
the
Zoom.
word. I've been
Yeah,
doing Zoom
I.
for 10 years, but the guides have said to me, the Holy Spirit has said to me, whatever vernacular you want to use, that bringing people together
I almost spit my water out.
physically is so important. It's so important to bring people together physically and to have that physical connection as well as the connection on Zoom. I mean, some of my best friends, like I've only met on Zoom, the people I've had on the shows, and you, but you did come down to Australia.
I
So I met
did.
you physically, got to hug you, and we
Yes.
sat on the bed and chatted, and it was great. But you said something in the group the other day, which was prompted me to ask you again to share your story
Oh, yeah.
about, and I said, I want you to share this publicly because I often do groups where I don't record and people can share openly and not worry about being on a, platform and it's not recorded, and just so people can talk. And you said something about being angry at Andrew for leaving you and how you dealt with that. And I thought, wow, that was such a beautiful story. Do you want to share that?
I'd be happy to. When he passed away, he was 50 years old, and we'd been together 26 years, and we'd built a life, and we'd added on to our home, and he was a jack of all trades, master of like four. So I have welding tools and I have plumbing tools, and he was a concrete man, but I also have, recording equipment because he was a m musician. There's a guitar hanging, one of his guitars here, like just stuff. And I've come to realize, because he's come through in readings, he was a bit of a hoarder. He was a shopaholic, not like you see on the TV shows, and it's disgusting and gross, but there's a lot of stuff. And you've heard of this thing called Swedish death cleaning, which is you clean everything up so nobody has to deal with all your things when you pass away. That's what it is, right? Man, I'd wish I'd heard about that before he got sick. So he'd move to the higher realms, and sometimes I would have a really beautiful connection with him. But I was still dealing with everything in this world that he left behind. I had a house unfinished and stuff to clear out of the garage. You couldn't even walk through our driveway. There were so many tools and equipment and supplies of construction and trucks, and I couldn't even tell you. It's just incredible. I love the experiences and the miracles that happened over the last year with him. But I was doing the dishes one night, and I tend to get a lot of messages when I'm doing the dishes for whatever reason. I think it's the water is a good conductor, right? And I'm mindlessly, so, some people go walking, I do dishes, whatever. And I started to let the emotions flow. I'd been holding a lot in because I'd had a lot to plan, and I was taking care of children who lost their dad. So I'm sitting there doing the dishes, and I thinking about all the things I had to do and all the dishes, and there's this thing doesn't work because he never fixed that before he passed away. He always said he was going to fix it, and it's building and it's building, and I got mad. I got so mad. I was freaking out, and I don't usually get like this, but I remember picked up the dish that I was in my hand, and I threw it into the sink, shattered everywhere. And I said, "I'm so mad at you." I was like, "Damn it. Damn it, Andrew, I want you to come back right now. I want you to stand here in front of me in your spirit form. Tell me you're sorry. Tell me you're sorry for all of this." Just sweaty, hot tears. I was screaming. I don't know where my kids were, hopefully in bed. Nobody saw, nobody heard that I know of. But I lost it. I lost my mind. It was one of those grieving moments when no matter how much you know, it hits you, right? And it did. It hit me really hard. And I went to bed in tears. And I woke up the next morning, and I happened to be reading a book. And it was this book by a friend. You've had him on your show, Dr. Jeff O'Driscoll. And it's a book called Not Yet. And in this book, it just so happened that the next chapter I was about to read was on forgiveness. And in this chapter on forgiveness, it said basically to sit and wait for somebody to tell you sorry is actually quite selfish. Just forgive them anyway. And I was like, oh man, synchronicities. That kind of almost made me mad. Like, why did I have to get that synchronicity? Can't I stay mad at him a little longer? Right? But I knew I had to take care of this. And it's big. It was a pretty big, heavy feeling. I was pretty mad. I had a lot I had to do. Over the course of a few years, different modalities and different things speak to us. And I had learned that labyrinths speak to me. I was just always drawn to rock walking labyrinths. And there was this labyrinth in southern Utah that I'd actually gotten Andrew and a couple of my kids to go to a few months before. But it's about a 6 hour drive away, and it's called the Desert Rose Labyrinth. And southern Utah is like the center of Australia. It is red rocks. It's where the Grand Canyon is. I don't really know the Celsius, but Fahrenheit, it's 105 on a good day. It was 112. It was the middle of July. And I decided to go down and go walk this labyrinth. And I am not a sunbather. I don't like to get in the sun. I do now after this experience because I'm going to tell you about it. But I decided to take this burden that I was carrying, this forgiveness, and take it to this labyrinth all on my own. So I drove down there and I made sure it was noon. It was right in the middle of the day and that sun was right above me and it was 112 degrees out. And I just wore like some sandals and just this like t-shirt sundress, nothing else. And it was hot. And I started to walk this labyrinth. And this is a quite large labyrinth. It can take 10 to 20 minutes just to get to the center. And I started to walk this labyrinth and I was like, whew, okay, babe, I forgive you. I forgive you. Oh, I'm so mad. I forgive you. You know, it's like the spirit of the thing convincing myself. And as I walked it, I really did. I started to sit in this forgiveness. And then it turned to this, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for all the things that I didn't do all of 26 years of marriage and all the things I did do that weren't right, or just all of this started coming up. And I felt his presence. And he was right there. And this voice, and it was kind of often when he comes in and he communicates with me, it's a cross between hearing his voice and a knowing. So it's coming in really fast. And he's like, oh, there's nothing to forgive. There is nothing to forgive. You were perfect. You're beautiful. You knew exactly what I needed. Da, 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 da. All this stuff came through. I'm sitting there in tears. I'm so sorry. And I forgive you. But it's clearing it. But I get to the center. I get to the center of this labyrinth. And what do? I don't know. I didn't bring any offerings or anything. So I just stood there. And I turned and faced the sun, and I closed my eyes and I put my hands out. And I'm standing there like this. And the sun is just baking down on me. And the little beads of sweat, like I could feel my skin glistening. And every little bead of sweat felt like it was a magnifying glass of that hot, hot sun. And I could feel myself literally burning. And I don't know if I stood there for 5 minutes or 20 minutes, it felt a long time. And the sweat was pouring, and I could feel it gather at the back of my neck and trickle all the way down my back, behind my bra, down my spine, all the way down my legs to the ground. So I was literally just dripping this sweat all the way down. It felt like all of that, the forgiveness, the sorry, all of it was just burned off, completely burned away. Like a phoenix, I don't know. But it just completely burned away. And at some point, I gathered myself and I love the sun now. I absolutely love sitting out in the sun. And I didn't before this, but it's so healing. And then I was like, well, I didn't really have an intention or prepare what I was going to do as I walked out of the labyrinth. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to start walking out. And lo and behold, actually, my spirit guide Elizabeth showed right up. She always comes on this side of me. And she showed right up and she was like, oh, and I could just feel and sense all this happy and this bubbly. I'm like, you are the most beautiful thing. And I love you so much. And now I can show you how much I love you because that's gone. It was as though moving that out made it so she could come in. And I just, it healed a huge piece of that grieving part. So that's the Desert Rose Labyrinth. It's in Ivins, Utah, IVINS. If anybody wants to traverse down there, it's just an open labyrinth in the desert, rocks, red rocks. It's gorgeous. So,
Beautiful. And you said that you never felt that resentment and that, why did you leave me with all this crap again? Like that
Every
heaviness.
once in a while it pops up. If I go to try and find something in the garage, I'm looking for a hammer and I find eight grinders, but I don't find a hammer. And I'm like, seriously? And I start, and it creeps up, and then I go, but it's fine. It's totally fine. Because, it is fine. What are these things that we worry about? Why? What are these things that we hold on to? There's nothing to resent them for. It's as it should be.
Oh, darling one. Oh, look at the time. Four, four,
I'm not
four.
looking. It's 4:44 for you? Oh, it's 10:44 p.m. for me. 4:44 is my number right now. Thank you.
There's so much more. I'm just thinking I could ask you a million more questions because I know, because unlike most of the people I have on the show, I know your story.
Yeah.
I mean,
He's around me all the time,
yeah.
and I've had some amazing experiences recently, and he will have been gone 5 years this March.
Five. God, it seems like yesterday. Five.
He's a beautiful spirit guide for me too,
Do you
and he
remember
teaches me a lot.
when you came to Australia, we went to see Jai Jagdish, that beautiful singer.
Oh my gosh, yes, I do remember
And we were
Jai.
sitting in the audience and there was something, we were talking about something. He came
I
through and
remember
something
exactly.
hilarious. What did he say?
You, well, honestly, Karen, so you got us in so we could see Jai perform, and the people we were traveling with decided not to come. So you and I, and it was finally just me and you. And you had counseled me along over the last year and after he had transitioned and moved to the other realms. And so we were kind of waiting for Jai to start performing, and we were like leaning in and whispering to each other. And you were like, "Oh, I've seen cancer and da da da." And I'm like, "Yeah." And you're like, "How was it when he passed?" And la la la. We were starting to talk about these things. And both you and I at the same time were like, I remember in my head what it sounded like. Like, he doesn't want us talking about this. And you go, "He doesn't really want us talking about this stuff. We need to talk about something else."
I
And
remember now.
I went, "Well, you know what, Karin? You never saw it, but he had a really great ass. Great butt." And I think you said something like, "Yeah, he said he did. He had a really great butt." And we were in this hall and everybody was gathering for Jai, and you and I were laughing so hard.
I remember what he said now because we were talking about the cancer and he said, please don't remember that aspect of my life. Can't you remember how good I was in bed? That's what he said. It cracked me up. I
I
remember.
did. I said, "Well, he did have a really great ass." Like, and we lost it. But
Oh,
that's what it's
God.
like. That's what it's really like.
I know the people that have passed are so joyous. Even I remember who's passed, who went through so much pain in her life, physical pain and emotional pain. She's so joyous. Once I found her, once I got a hold of her, because I didn't want to know that she'd gone. Is she really gone? Is she really gone? When I found her in spirit, oh my God, the joy that they radiate, the joy, the joy, the
I'll
joy.
be talking to somebody, and sometimes it's over the phone, and he'll kind of come up and they'll be like, "Oh, there's a really big, there's something really big in the room, And I'll go, "Yeah." And they'll go, "Oh," and it's so happy and loving. And that's who he was in life too, was this big,
Yeah, there's a
happy,
big
loving thing.
presence.
But I will say this. I do want to say this. He has come through that same friend, daughter, and everything another time, and she was giving me some messages, and she goes, "I don't really know why he's telling me it in this way, but he wants you to know, like, for about the first 3 weeks," and they don't have a concept of time, but he's telling me in time, "For about the first 3 weeks, it was like what he thought it would be up there, but then after this 3 week time, it dropped away, and it is unbelievable and more amazing than anything he could have ever imagined. And he loves it." So, he grew up with
That's
that Mormon paradigm, and I'd love to sit and chat with
interesting.
him.
So he was creating that Mormon paradigm, like as many people say, what happens when you die, whatever you believe. So if you believe in the heaven, or I've heard
Or
of,
Buddha, you're going to meet
or
Buddha.
Buddha, or I've heard of people say that, atheists who believe that there's nothing will have the experience of lying in their grave with nothing, like
Now, I
the
haven't heard that near-death
Oh, yeah,
experience, but
I've
that's
heard,
interesting.
if they don't believe in life after death, and then they realize that they're still alive, like they're still conscious, and they're lying in a grave, and they're like, what the hell am I doing in there? And they travel with thought, and so they start thinking, and things manifest, and so whatever you believe. So it sounds like he was saying that he was experiencing his beliefs, and then that fell away after a while, and there was so much
That's
more.
how I interpret it, yeah. And good thing that Reiki is real and I prepared him well, because I think he learned stuff pretty fast on the other side there for whatever. I don't know what that preparation was. I don't believe, I don't ever, it never felt like it was preparing him to pass. It meant like it was preparing him for something after. That's what that all has always felt like to me. And there are things, I've learned just through my studies, and I hear this from other people, you know, oh, do you get coins? Or I see a butterfly and that always makes me think of so and so, or things like that. Well, they have to learn how to do that. Well, Andrew showed up to my Reiki master, and he met her a few times, but he actually showed up to her as well the night that he died. And she says she woke up and she's very gifted. She actually had an, I would love for you to interview her, by the way. She had a
Yeah,
near-death experience as she
let's
was
do
being
that.
born.
Let's
Yeah,
do
she was having a near-death experience as she was being born. The cord wrapped around her head and she died and went to the other side but came back. So she grew up always seeing angels. But anyway, she said she sat up in bed because Andrew and this friend of hers, who was a musician as well, passed away a few years ago, were sitting at the end of her bed. Oh no, they were standing at the end of her bed and they were playing guitars
Yeah, playing
and
music.
they were singing. Yeah. And they did this like guitar leap kick off the edge of the bed. And she told me the song that they were singing and playing was Spirit in the Sky. You know, going on up to the spirit in the sky. And that actually, from the time me and Andrew met, I don't know if we were gross or not or morose, but we were like, when I die, this is the song that's going to be played at my funeral. And that was the song that he had always told me his whole life would be played at his funeral. And he shows up in the middle of the night
Singing
playing
that.
guitar and singing to my friend. Now, that's, I would assume that's a little difficult because they go to the other side and they learn how to do these things.
Well, I think it's, learning. I don't think you need to learn. You need to know how to acclimate your energy frequency so that you can match a frequency on Earth, because it's such a dense frequency down here.
Right.
And when you're flying high, now you've got to change that vibe so
Yeah.
that we down here can find you.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and
Well,
that's a bit of skill to do that. It's a
yeah.
bit of skill to do that, because if you're flying high, why would you want to,
Yeah. But I do, I have
bring
heard
it
that they sit
down?
in classrooms, you know, a lot of Garnett's books or people sitting in classrooms learning
Yeah.
things in Eglea is, I think, is what he calls it. But,
Yeah, the
you
city.
know, some people or souls, when they pass, they have to learn how to ask that butterfly, hey, can I borrow your body for a minute and take
Right.
this essence and show up to my loved ones?
Right,
They
right,
need a
right.
sign today. They're really sad. Can we do that? And they have to learn how to do that. So I like to think that's what I prepared him well for. I won't know until he tells me, or if I sit and meditate on it long enough. Does it matter? No. But what matters is that he's in bliss and he shows up and I'm living my life now.
You know, what I'm getting so strongly is what I said before. It's not even prepared, is not even the right word. Learned experience lived, that experience of shifting perspective, like letting go of being right. For many, that is the hardest thing to do. It's the hardest thing to do. Like, I'm right about this. And what's it going to take to knock you out of your paradigm that you're hanging on to beliefs that are no longer serving you? What's it going to take for the world to let go of beliefs that are no longer serving us as a human
Right.
race?
Right.
What does it take to change people's minds? Like, that experience is huge. And
Yeah.
it's a collective experience that we're having here on Earth. There's
It
so
is. And when I put that in along the lines of thinking about my late husband and who he was, oh man, he was more stubborn than me, and I'm pretty stubborn. And he, you could not, and he was dogmatic. Like, you know, it was his way was the right way, was the only way often. And we would go back and forth when I walked away from the church. And it was interesting actually, because he did tell me the last year of his life, he did say, you know, honey, I do see that there are problems here. I just feel like I can make a change from the inside. And so he's, that's why he stayed. With one foot in and one foot out. But anyway, but yeah, it the ultimate shift. You know, we've talked about before, and sometimes you have guests and they talk about getting hit over the head by the spiritual 2x4,
Yeah, the
right?
spiritual sledgehammer. I call it the spiritual sledgehammer. I've had lots of them.
Yeah, I
Hit over
mean,
the head.
that's his life experiences. I mean, you know, I don't know that he had to die to get that, but that's sure what he got when he passed.
Absolutely.
That's what you're telling me, yeah, shift in his perspective.
Shift in perspective from fear to love. That's what I think it was Marianne Williamson attributed to her, or Nelson Mandela, or anyway, a miracle is a shift in perspective from fear to love. That's what she calls a miracle. A miracle is a shift in perspective from fear to love. That's a miracle. That's what he achieved in this lifetime. Shifting perspective from fear to love.
And guess what? I get to learn it now too.
Yeah.
Do you know, he taught me well.
He taught you well. There's so much more to your story. I don't think we've got time tonight, but I wanted you to share also, maybe on another time, we'll have you back.
I'll edit something else out.
The experience of meeting your birth dad, that was something I remember. That's a long story. That's another show. We'll do that.
I do have an entire book here.
We've got to get it in the book, darling. Put it in the book.
But I have an entire book about, and I will say this, and it will be coming at some point, but we are connected spiritually. I have a spiritual DNA that definitely, and I have learned this through meeting my birth parents, as well as, you know, growing up with my parents. And I've actually had some recent experiences too. We'll talk about it another time, but that spiritual DNA is just as important as my earthly DNA.
Absolutely.
And it makes me who I am.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
There is a reason that I am this mix. Mm-hmm. And I have learned it recently now, and I can't wait to share that with the world. So
get it down, write it down,
get it down, write it out.
We could have been promoting the book next time, but honey one,
Karen,
it's been 8 years coming, but we got you on the show to share just some of your story, and it was so beautiful. I love you so much. Thank you so much.
I love you so much. Thank you for everything you've given me too. I sit in gratitude. You're one of the names that's on a long list, but you're always at the top. People I'm grateful for when I write it out. It's true.